This is a ghost story, but it starts with the Lalones. Give me a minute. I'll get to the scary stuff. But first, I have to make some introductions. All three kids looked like John Cougar Mellencamp. Picture John Cougar Mellencamp at varying ages. John at 9, popping cherry bubblegum in a torn, striped polyester shirt and blue jeans. A second female, John at 11, with feathered blonde hair and a denim jacket. A gap between her front teeth, as wide as the space between tines and a fork. To be seated at the very back. I would meet them at the bus stop by Westcott Reservoir every morning, and the cocks crow the rise of the pale orange upstate New York sun. I descended from Stern, Massachusetts stock, the Malones from a drifter family that probably could be traced back to the nomads of the Dust Bowl. I was 10 years old and in fifth grade. And I was coming to terms with the fact that I was getting weirder all the time. The affluent kids wouldn't talk to me if they were paid to. The wannabes made sure to snicker in overtime at my strange white makeup and my love of reading dictionaries. And the truth was, bones. Even when neighbors at this very second were forming a petition to get them evicted from their house. A house surrounded by a lineup of half-repaired motorcycles, a broken screen door, and featuring a mostly mown lawn, except for a very high patch in the middle, full of overgrown thatch that looked like it was begging for some sort of high moon mystical rite. Involving lonely dreadlocked witches on DMT. There was no other house in the colonial uptight Westvale that looked quite like it. But the main thing was, the Lamones laughed at all my jokes. I had up to this point tried my darndest to fit in with the elementary school politics, come up with comedy routines, plays, and comic strips meant to entertain and enlighten all. But the truth was, I was slipping. I was going off the deep end. I was getting further away from whatever was considered normal. In the past, I would have shied away from the Lamones. But at a certain point, I realized, ah, what the hell? I'll settle for the easy audience. Impersonations of early 20th century Jewish vaudeville comedians. I needed whatever love I could get. I needed what the Lamones gave. Hysterical guffaws that left tears streaming out of the corners of their eyes. They loved me. And I loved learning about sex and dirty jokes from them. For example, one of them thought a birth control pill was something you placed inside your poontang, and then you would wait 12 hours and feel a tingle inside. So, to make a long story short, I finally graduated to the act of inviting the Lamone sisters to spend a Sunday afternoon at my house. It was in late spring, and the sun was shining bright, and the basement of my grandparents' house, for it was they who were raising me, was thick with the scent of mold, overheated ham radio equipment, and dank wool rugs. It looked like a perfect 50s den. Down there, the walls painted sea foam green. And my grandfather's indoor tool shed awaited us, thick with the scent of aged oil and coffee cans of used-up diodes. A walk-in closet housing his oldest of electronics projects, including a build-it-yourself shortwave radio from the 30s, a massive bubble-shaped behemoth in a cream color tin housing, powered by glowing glass cathode rays. I grew up surrounded by my grandfather's electronic projects. Not just their sights and smells, but their sounds. Once he would get home from work, he would be active on his ham radio equipment, tapping a torrent of Morse code, a rapid staccato of... For 2 or 3 hours until dinner time, he'd flip a button or two on his massive control area in the basement, and a self-built 5-story antenna would start rotating in the backyard. This antenna was twice as tall as our house and as wide. It was an amazing edifice that presided as the tallest structure in the neighborhood and made some impressive and mythological hums as its motor would turn on and it would swivel its way through the branches of the trees, rustle, threatening to break off limbs. As my grandfather would switch his reception from West Germany to Hawaii to Okinawa, the man tapped messages with other middle-aged nerds all over the planet with such frequency that even when he would shut down for the night, I would still hear the beep-beeps of their conversations echoing in my brain. Late nights, I would wake up thinking I was hearing very faint ham radio frequencies. I'd strain to listen to the night, the winter wind in the hollows, traffic on a distant street, and something very far off would careen up and down, like the eerie sounds of my grandfather's receiver, as the notes of phantom beepers worldwide would be tuned in and out, making their frequencies yowl and growl like dozens of ambulances charging past one another and into the distance. Always, we would sit there, listening for beepers in the static. My childhood consisted of this mysterious and monastic existence. I, like a fly trapped in amber, a mind suspended in this freeze of global static. So, on their momentous visit, I wanted to treat the Malones like royalty, all the while reaping from them the devotion of indentured servants. Naturally, I wanted to show off my grandfather's radio equipment. The thing is, I didn't know how to control any of it. I could switch most of the machines on, but I didn't know what to dial next. But I knew I had to show these off anyway, try something I had never done before. Mad geniuses were all the rage. Maybe I could figure something out. So, after an afternoon of getting popsicles from an ice cream truck, dangling disconsolately on my swing set, painting our fashion dolls green and turning them into warrior princesses, and then the great feature of me showing off my collection of books I had written, it was time to take the Malones down to what was in many ways my favorite machine of all, of my grandfather's machines. The ancient shortwave radio. It sat in the closet, once used for canning, now a tool shed. Musty with New York humidity, smelling of sweat and sweet wood. The nubby metal housing was cool to the touch, but it made a warm sound when you flipped the metal switch. A honey-colored pop, ooh, a recognition of its summons. You summoned, and it would summon. I assumed it was like my grandfather's other devices, one on which you could listen and also send sounds out. In other words, have a conversation. Of its many old-fashioned switches, there was one marked S and REC, which I took to mean send and receive. I assembled the Malone sisters around me, the air thick with our smells of shampoo and over-bleached cotton and grape bubblegum. The sisters ooing and awing with expressions on their faces that reminded me of Santa's elves. I turned the shortwave radio on and tuned in the Greenwich time clock. I simply love the idea of listening to time pass. Test out whether this radio would enable us to have a conversation with a life form, somebody, something out there. I flipped the switch marked SREC. I looked on the face of the machine for something that would be like a condenser microphone. The vent-like slats you see in old tape recorders, where you were supposed to put your mouth to the concealed mic and give it your best shot. Started fiddling with dials, trying to tune in something. mostly American stations to be heard, car commercials, and then something in German, in a station with French or Polish accordions. It was a global radio, after all. And I suggested we try it again. I tuned the dial to the silence thrum of static. And we concentrated ourselves around the small vent whose purpose we can only guess. Hello, we repeated. Like a voice. It was like time rupturing. It was like the caw of a crow in the sound of those electric talk boxes that emphysema patients have attached to the holes in their throats. From the speakers of that radio came a sound that was unmistakably the word hello said back to us. The two Lalones and I stared at each other with the primal recognition that we had heard the word hello, but in such a distorted and bone-chilling way that we instantly were filled with fear. Liquid tingling fear. And we bolted up the stairs, away from the dank tool closet and the moldy basement, whipping around the corner and out the back door into the ever-so-settling rays of the summer sun. Beneath our nervous feet, we were shaking. We looked at each other and all agreed on what we heard. Perhaps if it was a mild-mannered, slightly effeminate-sounding British hello, as one might hear in a TV advertisement, we would have stayed down in that tool shed and responded. However, something of this hello warped the space of this room and reached with clammy tendrils into and through our ears and down into our chests, and we could no longer bear to be near the device which had delivered such a blow. I couldn't even bear to walk back down into the basement and turn the thing off. I heard it humming its static down there whenever I braced myself to open the basement door and listen. However, no voices greeted me through the floor. I spent many nights afterwards rehearing that chilling hello in the back of my head. Lying awake in my bed, thinking about what my grandfather told me when he got home after the Lalone's visit ended. He told me that while it was old and had many mysterious markings on its front, it was just a shortwave radio with no microphone on it at all. No ham radio type conversations could occur. I was too tired to tell him that I and two witnesses actually said hello into it and heard the most unearthly response, which to this day I have never forgotten. When my grandfather died, my grandmother quickly got rid of the thing. It was so old, I imagine it could now be sitting in a ham radio hall of fame. A radio hall of fame with the unearthly margarine yellow glow of its cathode ray tubes. A machine that could only exist in Oz. With Jennifer Robin. Yeah.